you probably will have the opportunity to read the book of Revelation at least twice, if not three times, while we're studying it verse for verse. It will be worth your while to do that. And I would suggest you read it in a modern translation. New English, the New English, or the New International. Or even the Revised Standard Version would be. Or the New Century. Yeah. I'm not sure what Monty uses. New Century. It would be to your advantage to do that, and I would certainly recommend it if you would do that. Now, tonight I want to finish chapter 2 and then give you a couple of new pages. The what? No, I have an extra folder here for people who don't remember to bring theirs. I have another one in case somebody forgot to bring theirs. Nobody wants to admit it, huh? See, what was I saying? Yeah, okay. Chapters 2, 3. Chapters 2 and 3 contain the letters to the seven churches. And I'm going to be passing these out to you right now. So you'll have them when I get to chapter 2. They're already punched. They're ready to put in your booklet. You can put them in some other time. You don't want to put them in tonight. But you pass that one out, and Bert will pass this one out. What it is, it's a chart comparing the letters to the seven churches of Asia. There are six or seven component parts in each letter. And I've got them broken down that way for you. To take a look at those letters. They're interesting letters, unusual letters, and we'll analyze them and take a look at them. I think they have something to say to us here in the 21st century. Now, when we get over to chapter 2 tonight, I will explain to you how to work this chart out. You see, I left enough of the chart off for you to have to do some work on your own. Sorry I did that.
Okay. No. Yep. There you go. This is what I need.
Okay, everybody's got one. Okay. See, we got 2, 4, 6, 8, 10 tonight. That's good. Now, just a word or two about the island of Patmos. If you look at the map and find Turkey today, or back then it was called Asia, you'll find that Patmos is an island just off of the coast of Turkey or the coast of Asia. It's a rocky, small, barren island. By barren, I mean no regular inhabitants, usually used for political exiles. Or for some reason a person was to be taken out of the community because of some crime he committed or something that was used for that type of thing. And that's where John was in his latter years. How long he'd been there, we do not know. Yes, that's a series of islands out there. And Patmos is one of them. Now, that's where he says he was when he was told to write down the things that he saw and heard. And he was in the Spirit on the Lord's day. Now, most commentators say that was the first day of the week, or Sunday, or the Lord's day. That may very well have been. I'm not going to dispute that. But I'm not going to rule anything else out also. It could have been a special day in which John received this revelation. He heard behind, this is verse 10, he heard behind him a loud voice as of a trumpet. Now you know how a trumpet sounds, right? I'm not going to make an effort to sound a trumpet tonight. And the trumpeter said, I am the Alpha and the Omega, the first and the last. Alpha and Omega, of course, are the alphabet letters of the Greek alphabet, first and last letters, comparable to our A and Z. And what you see, write as a book and send it to the seven churches which are in Asia, to Ephesus, to Smyrna, to Pergamos, to Thyatira, to Sardis, to Philadelphia, and to Laodicea. Now, they were not the only churches established in Asia. The church was quite populous in Asia at one time, and there were a bunch of churches. And these are just some sampling of churches. Somebody asked the question, well, why these seven? You'll just have to ask the Lord when you meet him. I don't know. I don't know why he chose these seven. But he did. Verse 12, and I turned to see the voice that spoke with me, and having turned, I saw seven golden lampstands. That's a stand with a lamp on it. And in the midst of the seven lampstands, one like the Son of Man, clothed with a garment down to the feet and girded about the chest with a golden belt. Now, as the description goes on, it gets more apocalyptic, if you please. His head and his hair were white like wool, as white as snow. His eyes were like a flame of fire. Now, your imagination needs to take over right now, and you begin to see this descriptive person. His feet were like fine brass, as if refined in a furnace, and his voice as the sound of many waters. He had in his right hand seven stars. Out of his mouth went a sharp two-edged sword. I told you it would move into the arena of apocalyptic, and it has.
That could very well be a sharp.
It could. And his countenance was like the sun shining in its strength. Who do you suppose he's describing here? One like the Son of Man. Who is Jesus Christ? You're exactly right. Now, the context in the book Revelation will continue to come back to this point and emphasize that this vision was a vision revealing Jesus the Christ. And he laid his right hand on me as I fell dead, as I fell at his feet as if dead, and saying to me, do not be afraid, I am the first and the last. Why do you suppose that he keeps saying that? I am the Alpha and the Omega. I am the first and the last. What's that got to do with our relationship with Jesus Christ anyway? Okay. All right, he's certainly expressing his eternal nature, isn't he?
He made the world.
All right.
He's here to make the judgment.
Okay. All right. Do you remember what God told Moses to tell Pharaoh who he was? I am who I am. Yeah. I am he who lives and was dead, and behold, I am alive forevermore. Well, of course, that fits to the resurrection of Jesus Christ, doesn't it? And I have the keys of Hades and of death. I appreciated Monty's sermon Sunday night. He did an excellent job in defining what happens to us after death. And the difference between Hades, Tartarus, I hope you caught the word Tartarus as he used it, or Tarsus. Tartarus, Hades, hell, death. They're mistranslated by some translations, and so there's some confusion about what happens after death because of those mistranslations, but he did a good job explaining them. And using Luke chapter 16 as a basis for his explanation. So I have the keys of Hades and of death. What does that mean? He has control over them, doesn't he? He has control over them. He can lock them up or turn them loose. Verse 19. Write the things which you have seen and the things which you are. And the things which are. And the things which will take place after this. The mystery of the seven stars which you saw in my right hand, and the seven golden lampstands. The seven stars are the angels of the seven churches, and the seven lampstands which you saw are the seven churches. Now, wouldn't it have been wonderful if Jesus would have just gone ahead and explained all the other visions that John was to have like he did this one? But he chose not to. He chose not to. In some ways he did, but for the most part he did not. But here he identifies the seven lampstands as being the seven churches of Asia, and the seven stars as being what?
Angels.
The angels of the seven churches. Now that's interesting. Is the text suggesting here that there is an assigned angel over every congregation? Do we have an abiding angel here? Well, I wouldn't say no, and I wouldn't say yes necessarily, but you turn to the book of Hebrews, and what do you discover? I wish this thing quit blowing my ear. What do you find in the book of Hebrews in regards to angels? What did the writer of Hebrews say angels were? What? Ministering spirits. That means they're actively involved in supervising the care of God's people. Well, be that as it may, here is the scene of the Son of Man and the description as he walks among the seven golden lampstands, thus the seven churches. What he's saying here is he is observing them. He is looking into them. He is judging them. He's making an appraisal. So, what happens then in chapters 2 and 3, you have a capsule analysis of the seven churches of Asia. And if you'll look at your chart now, you'll see that each church, each letter, has a greeting. There is the description of Jesus broken down now for each church, in addition to what we see described in chapter 1. There is a commendation with two exceptions. Sardis and Laodicea, right. Now, I put a line through Philadelphia there, but that shouldn't be there. That's a mistake. And then you have condemnation. Sardis does not have one. Well, yes, Philadelphia does not have one. Right. And then you have warning and threat. You have exhortation. And you have promise. Now, I've given you the scripture references. All you need to do is whatever you want to do. But we'll be going over these tonight and next Wednesday night. The verses will reveal the answers to the chart, the items in the chart. Now, I found an interesting analysis of these seven churches that I'd like to share with you that you can pencil in your notes on your own. And that is, Brother Hazellip, who used to be the president of David Lipscomb University, whom I got to know fairly well when I was president of National Christian School Association, chairman of the board. Brother Don. I can't even think of his last name now. Anyway, he died rather suddenly. And so we met as a committee on the campus of David Lipscomb in the boardroom adjacent to Brother Hazellip's office. And we were about halfway through our meeting, and lo and behold, they got a threatening call over the telephone. And they had to empty the whole campus. And here we are in the boardroom next to Brother Hazellip's office. And we're delaying getting out because we wanted to do our business. And finally he sticks his head in the door. He says, "I'm telling you folks, you better get out of here right now." He said, "Because we're emptying the campus. There's been a bomb threat." So we got out of there real quick, like. But he goes on to give, in this particular commentary that I have, an analysis of each letter to each of the churches and characterizes them. He gives them a characterization that I thought was very, very interesting. And if I can find that, I'll share that with you. But as you look at each one of these churches and the letter, it brings out a characterization of that church, the personality of that church. It's just like the Plymouth Church here. Does the Plymouth Church here have a personality? It does. Does it ever change? Yeah, it does change. It changes as the members change. Because the members make up the personality of the church. Have you ever visited a church and you came away and said, boy, they were friendly folks. What were you describing? You were describing their personality, their character. Or you may have been visiting this church and you came away that Sunday and you said to your family or to somebody, boy, they were cold and barren. So each church will have that kind of effect and response in terms of visitors who come by and take a look at them. Take, for example, Smyrna. If you'll read the letter to the Smyrna church, which is in chapter 2, verses 8 through 11, you'll find that was a poor church. A poor church that was rich. Now there's a nice commemoration thought. Poor but rich. Smyrna, by the way, was about 40 miles north of Ephesus. I'm still looking for that list that I wanted to give you. I didn't mark it, so did you know that one of the congregations was identified as the church where Jezebel was a member? Who was Jezebel in history? The wife of Ahab, yes. And Jezebel was probably one of the most wicked queens that ever lived in Palestine or Canaan. No. You wouldn't give your daughter that name, that's for sure. Do you remember how she met her death? They threw her out. They threw her out the window and she fell on the concrete below and dogs came and licked up her blood. Well, she's mentioned here. And Babylon is mentioned several times. And it's not literal Babylon, no more than it's literal Jezebel. But those terms are used in reference to certain conditions and certain people and certain churches here in the book of Revelation. Yeah. Yeah, I'm sure you have. You take Sardis, for example. Sardis is referred to as the church living in the past. The church living in the past. Philadelphia was known as the church that did what it could with what it had. The church that did what it could with what it had. Interesting how people view these various churches and their personality. Laodicea, the church that had it made. Apparently many of the citizens in the Laodicean church were wealthy. Well, it was a commercial city. located right on the trade route between the east and the west. So its people would have access to money-making propositions. Here's what this paper says. Hazlett proposed keywords for each of the churches. The church at Ephesus needed to return to its first love. The church at Smyrna had to get ready for suffering. Suffering is the key word for the church at Smyrna. The church at Pergamum needed to stand for truth. Truth is the key word. The church in Thyatira required greater holiness. Holiness is the key word for the church in Thyatira. The church in Sardis was lacking in genuineness. Genuineness is the key word. The church in Philadelphia was urged to take advantage of opportunities for evangelism. Evangelism is the key word. And the church in Laodicea was condemned for a lack of dedication. Dedication is the key word there. So, love, suffering, truth, holiness, genuineness, evangelism, and dedication were the key words of these seven churches. And there's a great deal of practical teaching from these letters that we can apply to the congregations where we're a member today. And perhaps you've heard ministers use the seven churches of Asia as a basis for a series of lessons on church growth and church development and church personalities. Now, let's take a look at the chart that you have and identify as many of these characteristics as we can. We'll start, of course, with Ephesus. Ephesus is the first one mentioned in chapter 2, verse 1, beginning. To the angel of the church of Ephesus write, these things says he who holds the seven stars in his right hand, who walks in the midst of the seven golden lampstands. So you have the greeting in chapter 2, verse 1. And the greeting is to the angel of the church of Ephesus. That's what you would put in that blank. And then you have a description in that same verse of Jesus. He's the one who holds the seven stars in his right hand and who walks in the midst of the seven golden lampstands. And that's what you would pencil in there. Description of Jesus. Commendation we find in verses 2, 3, and 6. I know your works, your labor, your patience, and how you cannot bear those who are evil. And you have tested those who say they are apostles and are not, and have found them liars. And you have persevered and have patience and have labored for my name's sake and have not become weary. So what are they commended for? Good works. Perseverance, patience, and identification of evil, of the evil ones. Condemnation. What does he have against them? All right, you have left your first love. Nevertheless, I have this against you, that you have left your first love. Well, what's the warning and the threat? Verse 5. Repent and return to your first works. Or what? I'm going to come and remove your candlestick. Does the Lord still do that today? Probably does. Probably does. An exhortation, verse 7. He who has an ear, let him hear what the Spirit says to the churches. To him who overcomes, I will give to eat of the tree of life, which is in the midst of the paradise of God. So you have the exhortation. And the exhortation is, hear what the Spirit says. And the promise is, I will give you to eat of the tree of life in the midst of the paradise of God. So that's the kind of thing that you do in working out this chart. And when you do that, in effect, what it's going to say to you is this is how uniform these letters are to the seven churches of Asia. At a glance, then, you can see what God is saying to these seven churches through John. Everybody understand what we're doing? Okay. I'll tell you what we're going to do. We're going to stop right now. We've got 20 minutes. No, I got 15 minutes. You got 15 minutes. I'm going to give you 15 minutes to do some of this right now while it's quiet and while you're not watching television. Just pencil in shorthand form or however you want to. It's your paper. Do however way you want to do that. But I've given you the references where the answers are.